Om Shanti, and good evening, and thanks to all of you for joining us on our Green Angel Day, and also welcome to all of you listening online. My name is Sister Sonia. I live in Baba Center in Copenhagen, and I'm part of the Brahma Kumaris Environment Initiative. This green t-shirt was made in Australia. We had it a green program, 60 green programs in Australia one season. So they made that t-shirt then. Yeah. It says, I can make a difference, which was the slogan. But anyhow, the Green Day became a celebration because it's Shivratri today. So special thanks to Sister Jenti and Brother Golo for accepting the invitation and to celebrate together with us. Both of them are known to you all. Sister Jenti is our additional administrative head of Brahma Kumaris and regional director of our centers in Europe and Middle East. And she has many other titles also. Brother Golo is initiated all the solar projects here in our headquarters and is advisor on renewable energy, including initiating the big solar in India One downstairs, India One solar thermal power plant. And both of them was part of initiating Brahma Kumaris Environment Initiative now 15 years ago. But I have asked them to share one thing about themselves that you wouldn't know. So I think I'll start with Sister Jenti. Can we have one secret from you as an introduction that you think the audience wouldn't know about you?
Om Shanti. Happy to see you all. From age 4 through to age 8, I stayed in a home in Pune, India.
Sorry, can you hear? No.
Can you hear now? Yes? Yeah, okay. So from age 4 to age 8, I remember my home. I don't remember too much about from 1 to 4. I remember bits, but not this bit. And in that little flat that we had, it was my grandfather, my grandmother, my mother, myself, my little brother, and a great-grandmother who was blind. And she would tell me stories from the scriptures, and I don't even know how she had become blind. Maybe later something happened to her eyes, or was she blind from birth? I don't know. But she knew all these scripture stories. And she would relate all these stories to me in particular, because my brother was too little. He was 4, and so he was running around doing other things. But that was an interesting part of my childhood that I won't forget. It epitomizes the extended family system that you have in India, but also just the fact that, you know, somebody very old, staying in the same house as young children. It's a very beautiful intergenerational experience. And of course, most people don't have it today. But that was India in the 50s.
Thank you. Yeah, Om Shanti, and welcome to our last program in this Green Day. A story some may know. When I was a very, very small boy, I always thought I'm born in the wrong country, in the wrong time, and I have the wrong parents. And maybe it was 5 or 6, and then I went to my mom and I said, what went wrong with me? And my mom, she said, boy, everything is totally okay. I said, you are not my parents. Huh? But my mother said, no, we are your parents. But I had always this strange feeling, I'm at the wrong place and the wrong time and the wrong country. And then I came to India and I thought, that's it. That's the country I love. That's why I had these feelings. And when I came in Gyan, then I also felt that's the knowledge and India is the country. So it was very interesting. It never left me, actually, when I was a youngster, that I always felt a bit out of place. So that's my thingy.
So today's topic is, as you know, climate change and how it impacts us and what our response is. Climate change, you can in one way say, is the biggest game changer today. And it's per drama, it will kick in even more. But it has also proven to be a great platform for service, as the need for meditation in this area is increasing as the anxiety comes up to the surface. It's an opportunity for us to understand the relationship between mind and matter more deeply. And in this environment field, we can make Gyan and our knowledge very relevant to address the current world situation. And I've had the fortune of being to every climate change conference together with Sister Jyanti and Brother Golo now for 15 years. But before I start the interview, I thought, let me ask you, the audience, how many of you are experiencing one kind of impact of climate change in one way or another, whether it is weather, fires, floods, or more rain, less rain? How many, you put a hand up. Yeah. How many have experienced dramatic or very severe impacts?
Storms.
Storms, yeah. They're from Greece. Yeah. Hands are coming up. So I thought we could begin this dialogue by taking a trip down the memory lane. It turns out that we have had green days in the double foreign season now for 13 years, since 2011. And I came across the interviews, my notes from an interview with you for 13 years ago. And at that time I asked Sister Jyanti, what is your special interest in the area of environment and mind and matter? And why should BKs be interested in environment? And I thought, okay, let me ask Sister Jyanti the same question 13 years later. But I also know that the regional coordinators, the RC group, have discussed the environment guidelines and policy this year. So maybe you can also share some insights from that discussion.
I see how Baba focuses very much on the fact that nature is there, very cooperative and a server for all of us in the golden age. And the connection, of course, everything begins now. It's not in Satyug, but it's today. And so to what extent am I actually serving nature? And one is, am I reducing my carbon footprint so I'm not damaging nature as much as I used to? I'm reducing that impact that I have of taking from nature. That's one aspect. And the other is, Baba's talked to us about using the power of the mind to send out those vibrations of peace and purity to the whole universe. And so we're not just thinking about peace in human minds, that's important, of course, but also the power of the mind impacting water, earth, air, fire, the ether. And so I know that if I serve nature today, in the end times, I won't be troubled by natural disasters. It'll be happening, but my experience, my feeling won't be that I'm at any risk, and maybe even I leave the body, but I won't get that feeling of pain or suffering from whatever is happening at that moment. And of course, Satyug is, of course, nature's going to be there to serve us beautifully. And the discussion in the RC meeting about guidelines and policies, and apparently, some of you might know this already, but it was put to us very categorically that the language of the UN is very specific, and our involvement with climate change links back to the UN because we started that connection, and it's the only world body that actually looks at things like climate, environment, and so on. And so the UN language is that if you say policy, it becomes mandatory for every center to actually follow those rules that are then specified. And with Baba in charge, we can't say we're going to create new rules of Srimat that you have to do X, Y, Z. All we can do is to suggest guidelines. It's like with vegan diet. There was a period when people who were very passionate about veganism would send me lots of emails, why is the Yagya not adopting a vegan lifestyle and making it mandatory for everyone? And I said, no, we had lots of discussions in the RC meetings about that too. No, we can't make it a policy. Vegetarian diet is what Baba made a policy, a principle for us. But at this moment, even though there's a lot of evidence of maltreatment of cows, the whole dairy industry is a little bit topsy-turvy. But we can't make it a policy as such. We can't make it mandatory. We have to leave it to personal choice because Baba didn't make it that. So it's interesting how the subject of guidelines and policies, even with veganism, you can see that if we were to issue guidelines, that's fine. Look at documentaries and you'll find a lot of information and then make your own decision. But we can't say it's a policy.
Thank you very much. So when I serve the elements and nature, nature will protect me. That's what I hear, yeah. So continuing down the memory lane, I remember our climate change conference in Paris, in COP21 in 2015. And the three of us, we met Professor Johan Rockström. And he is today director of the Climate Research Institute in Germany. And he's very enthusiastic and very driven, motivated professor. And I asked him how he could remain so hopeful even though all the statistics are going the wrong way. And he said at that time, I don't know what he would say now, but at that time he said he believes in technology becoming big and scalable. Means you can expand technology and roll it out over the whole world very fast. So he believed in technology. So I asked his student, what makes you hopeful? And she said that the soul is eternal. That gives me hope. And I asked Golubai, and he said, I believe what gives me hope is that I can shape the world around me with my thoughts. And I thought that was three very different answers to hope. And that each of us here in the audience, everyone needs to find their own source of hope. And for me, maybe it's kindness, as simple as kindness and love. But if I were to ask you today, what would you say today, Golo, if you're in the conference and you're speaking to delegates and conference participants, what gives you hope and what message or hope can you share?
It's a bit of a delicate question because the level of anxiety and worries among the delegates in climate conference has risen dramatically. You find a lot of people who are very frustrated with the slow progress of climate laws or legislation with the UN process. And people are worried about the future. So what gives me hope not necessarily gives them hope. So one has to be also sort of diplomatic. I always say that the crisis we are seeing right now, and it is not only a crisis of environment, it is also a crisis of biodiversity, economic crisis. Wherever you look, actually, it's a crisis of pollution also, for example. Last week I read an article that in Bangalore, which was one of the biggest cities in South India, the groundwater is almost exhausted, and they had to switch off several parts of the city from the water supply, and they supply water by tankers. And some households, they get one bucket per day. So what you're going to do with one bucket per day, and it's a city of 20 million people. So it's difficult to talk to such people and then say, oh, I have hope in this or that. So I'm a bit diplomatic and careful, and I also see the situation in which I'm asked about that question. But generally, I would like to say that a lot of hope for me comes that crisis is always a chance for transformation and for change. And if humans really see and analyze the situation we're right now in, everybody, not only Brahmins but also outsiders, they see what we face right now is a result of the actions of the past. And people understand that our actions are not right. And this crisis is a chance for change. And a crisis always is mobilizing also a lot of resources amongst humans, but also in individuals. You know, we can rise up to the challenge. So I'm trying to change the dramatic news into some inspirational message that it is a chance for everybody to transform and to change and to adapt. That it is sometimes very tough. That is also a thing which we are seeing right now. And unfortunately, the problems may increase in the future much more dramatically.
Thank you. Sister Dianti?
I agree with Golo that you can't suddenly use the word hope in a situation like in Bangalore. You know, it's a very sad story, and that story is repeated in many, many different places, not so far away from here, Abu Road, at the town on the top of the mountain here. Here we are very fortunate. We have water, but we get it in tankers from, I think, around the end of March. We also have to get it in tankers, but we have a supply. Baba provides us with a lot of everything. But if I'm in a situation at the UN, and the subject comes up about lifestyle, then they're now turning more and more to the Brahma Kumaris to say, well, how do you sustain transformation in lifestyle? And, of course, I let them know that it's because we don't feel we're renouncing anything, but we feel that we're gaining something even more precious. And so if we've given up meat diet, there's no regrets about it. There's no feeling, at least the people I talk to, there's no sense of any loss, but rather it's a sense of gain in that, yes, I'm practicing nonviolence. Yes, I'm doing something that's beneficial for the environment, but also that I'm doing something which is good for my own physical health. So in everything that Baba has asked us to change in terms of lifestyle, there's nothing but value, nothing but benefit. And so I say that meditation helps you experience a different dimension, and that gives you the power to continue with your and sustain whatever it is you've decided to change in your lifestyle. Because most people, they make a change for a month, and that's a big deal. 3 months later, they've gone back to something. So sustenance of a change is only possible through Baba.
Thank you. To focus on the gain. Coming back to now leaving the memory lane and coming to the present situation, I'd like to ask you, Golo, because I know you keep up to date with the climate change situation. What is the latest news in the field of climate change? I read that the Atlantic circulation is slowing down. It is on the edge of crossing the tipping point. It means for us in Scandinavia, it will become very cold. And we're seeing that in North Sweden. Also, I see Mala from Stockholm is nodding her head. It's been really, really cold. So what's the latest scientific finding, Golo, and what's in the pipeline?
As I only have 3 minutes to answer this question, that is quite a challenge. In a nutshell, is we can say that the situation has become quite dramatic. Some 20 years ago, when we started in climate science and we spoke to scientists, they told us, "Ah, the ice will melt in 500 years, because that's what our computer model is telling us." Then 10 years ago, they said, "It's melting maybe in 100 years." Then 3 years ago, they said it is melting in 50 years, and now they're saying it has already melted. So things are accelerating. And we have in climate various systems which form our day-to-day weather. And science has identified tipping points in climate. And they have 12 tipping points, the Arctic ice shield, the forests in Canada and Siberia, and the monsoon systems, El Nino, the Atlantic circulation, and so on. And out of 12 systems, 8 have started to change and to move. And science is now saying that we come into a critical area where 1 or 2 or 3 systems suddenly can shift and find a new state of balance, a new equilibrium. And for example, as Sonia mentioned, the North Atlantic circulation, it's stable since, they say, 10,000 years. Now it shows signs and has weakened by 20%. So if that collapses, it will completely shift the weather and agriculture production also in Europe, for example. It will become weather like Siberia. So as Baba told us many times, suddenly something will happen. And Baba says there are different gongs or bells in the drama also which will ring. And so what happens now in climate change, scientists say anytime anything can happen. But what is quite obviously is that last year was the hottest year on record. They expect this year to be again more hot. And what will happen is that the number of storms is increasing, the number of floods, the number of droughts. Global food production is at the brink of collapsing. It's already declining since the last 3 years. And global food production is under threat. And the heat waves also will increase, which will be a big problem for people who live in the global south or who live in big mega cities, because they will heat up a lot. Groundwater reserves are depleting dramatically. So the next years we will hear more and more bad news from that area. And here and there it will also affect us personally. And Baba gave us some advice, keep some food, keep some water, keep a bit this, keep a bit that. So water is very important, a cool place is very important. And just be mentally prepared anytime anything can happen. That's the situation right now. All over the world, these big research institutes have supercomputer, and they're trying to predict the near future. And it is a very complex and very difficult task. And I think only Baba really knows when, what exactly is going to happen. But be prepared that a lot of bad news and bad situations will come in the near future to us.
Listening to you, Golo, I wonder how you in the audience feel. How many of you are a little bit worried about future times?
It's like you have to ask them to be honest.
Yeah, they are honest. The camera is not on them. 1/3 maybe. How many feel hopeful and enthusiastic? I wish we had more time to go into depths of that. It's 1/4, so I wonder what the rest of you feel. But so that leads me to next question, actually, because part of today's dialogue will focus on us and our lifestyle and how we are impacted by climate change. And both of you, you meet many BKs and you sit in many meetings, and you are very deeply involved in the Yagya and various projects. According to your experience, how is climate change impacting BKs and our lifestyle at the moment? Sister Dianti first, and then Golo.
Certainly in Britain, which is the close immediate experience, is heat heat in summer. I remember when the first heat wave had come, I remember the year because Tadi Gulzar happened to be in London at the time. It was 1976, and nobody had ever experienced temperature beyond 25 centigrade at that time in the UK. And they ran out of fans. It was not possible to get any fans, things like this. It became an emergency. Then things settled, and I don't remember the next heat wave, but they kept coming. But the last few years, it's been hitting beyond 30 Celsius. And so people really are suffering. And then I tell them, well, people in Rajasthan are experiencing temperatures over 40. And they say, oh, they're really shocked. But you see that. And people who work out in the open in Rajasthan, that continues even when it's temperatures over 40. And in the in Kuwait, they don't tell people when it's over 40, because then by law it's illegal to have people working outside, and they want people to carry on working, so they don't even tell them. So heat is a big, big issue, and it goes on for days and weeks, and people get very, very depleted. And it impacts their state of mind, it impacts their irritation capacity to be able to deal with things. And then the other thing that UK has been hit by is floods. And somehow a lot of flooding seems to happen around Christmas time. And so it's a double hit, because anyway you have to deal with the flood, but you're also having to deal with children who aren't able to celebrate Christmas. Adults, okay, you cope with it somehow, but imagine children and there's no Christmas for them because there are floods in the house and everything's wet and messy and dirty. So that's been a very immediate experience in the UK.
So when you say it's affecting people's state of mind, would you also say it's affecting the BK's ability to meditate and keep peaceful? Has it reached so far?
Many of them tell me that because they can't sleep at night because it's too hot. So then, of course, then the body needs sleep at some time, and so Amrit Vela is not really a sweet, loving meeting with Baba. So yes, it impacts their Brahman life, and of course, if you're not having Amrit Vela, then that has an impact on everything else that you're doing through the rest of the day. So it is a big impact.
Thank you. Golu?
Well, I'm most of the time in India, and over the years I've seen quite a dramatic shift in the weather actually here in Mount Abu, but also the rest of India. And we can see recently that there have been big farmer protests also around Delhi, but also in South India. And the main reason is that farming has become more tedious because of climate change, drought, too much heat. Things become difficult for farmer. For example, last year, India is one of the biggest exporters of rice and wheat in the world. It's, I think, the second or third largest exporter. And India last year in spring has stopped the export of rice and wheat. And the reason was is that the governmental warehouses became empty, and the government said, we cannot export any more rice and wheat, and our own warehouses are empty. And there was an unprecedented heat wave in Haryana and Punjab, and the wheat production came down. They had losses up to 30% in the wheat production, and rice also. In South India, they're very famous for producing coffee, especially in the Nilgiri Hills. And it was raining for 6 months continuously, and the coffee started to attract fungus and became useless. So they lost 50% of the coffee harvest. So in India, you can see that the farming sector is hit quite tremendously. And of course, here in India, in Mount Abu also in Abu Road, every year we are looking, is it raining or is it not raining? So every year we are counting the inches. And this year, for example, the rain came very late. But then finally it rained and rained and rained to the end. And we got our quota, which we actually need to run the operation here in Gyan Sarovar and in Pandav Bhavan and also in Shantivan. So the day-to-day life of people is already very, very much affected. Farmers are suffering, their income has dropped, and this causes, of course, all sorts of social tensions, which are then fanning out into the society. And temperature-wise, I have worked here in Shantivan when we built a solar cooker. It was 48 degrees. And the body has something called the wet bulb temperature. This is a combination of humidity and temperature. And when humidity is high and temperature becomes too high, the body cannot transpire any longer and you cannot cool down. And then you cannot stay outdoors because you will experience overheating and ultimately a heat stroke. It is lethal, it is dangerous, and old people, they suffer a lot. Last year they said that 50,000 people in Europe died because of the heat waves. 50,000 people. So the forecast for India is that many areas in India in summer, they will reach that what they call wet bulb temperature, where people cannot stay outdoors and even not work at all, but they cannot stay outdoor. They have to go inside under a fan or cooling and stop and drink and drink and drink. And this is quite a dramatic outlook, and that's happening in some places in summer already also here in India.
And how is it impacting the BKs then and their spiritual efforts? And
well, of course, if the climate is very super hot, it becomes difficult, as Jenti also said, for the body to recuperate. Body needs a certain maximum, certain minimum, also to sleep properly. You need certain favorable conditions. If this temperature condition, this bandwidth, is pushed to a maximum or to a new height, it will become very difficult for us to relax, to recuperate, or to feel well. And then, of course, if you're not a super yogi and 150% detached from the body and all these kind of things around you, you will be affected, you know. I remember when it is too hot, I'm going to History Hall and the fan is running full speed, the mosquitoes are circling around you, I feel not so comfortable. Like I'm in winter, when the fan is off, the temperature is moderate, I can put on something warm and I can balance my temperature. So of course we will be affected, everybody of us will be affected by these things.
Thank you. And staying here in India, I have a question first for you, Sister Jenti, because in COP29 in Dubai, the last climate change conference in Dubai, we had a live stream studio where we invited guests for an interview. And one of our guests was Mrs. Vibha Dhawan, the director of TERI. And TERI is the largest environment institution in India. And they also hosted a conference in New Delhi recently where Shivani and Brother Golo spoke. But Mrs. Dhawan, she said, and I will quote her, "Sustainability is engraved in the DNA of every Indian. That we in India have lost our way, but we are coming back." Sister Jenti, what do you think she meant by sustainability is engraved in the DNA of every Indian? Is it just a political statement? Or?
No, it's something that's very, very real. When you think about the relationship with nature, the relationship with the sun, the moon, the stars, the rivers, the forests, everything, Bharatvasis used to worship all of these things. Surya Namaskar, some of you practice that as a Hatha Yoga posture. But it didn't start as just a fancy thing to keep the body fit. It started as a real recognition that the Surya, the sun, is a deity. And if you think about this word Devta, the one who gives. And so the sun has been sustaining life for millennia, well, through the whole cycle, every cycle, so millennia after millennia after millennia. And so, yes, definitely the sun is a Devta. And so you say Namaste first to the sun, Namaskar. In the same way, all the rivers, all the forests, all of these things are considered to be sacred. Not just human life is sacred, but every aspect of nature is sacred. And so sustainability and that aspect of nature being sacred very much go together. You don't waste water because it's precious, it's sacred. I want to share a little thing that I read literally a couple of hours ago, came in one of my WhatsApp messages, and it said that my grandfather saw water in the river, and my father saw water in the well. I saw water coming out of a tap. My children are probably going to see water in a capsule. And what next? And so you can see how there was a time when water was valued and precious and nobody polluted it. And today so much has changed. And so that recognition that every aspect of nature is that which is giving us life, every tree is sacred, and nobody would cut down a tree just like that. Or if they did need to cut a tree, they would plant another one immediately to replace it, so that it would be aware of the generations that are to come and something is available for them. But yes, India also lost its way. This lady was very right in what she said. You know, the Dadi shares the story about how food, the food that was grown in their fields, on their farms, and fruit that came from the orchards, it was never sold. It was seen as a gift that had come to them from God, from nature. And so, firstly, whatever was produced was given to the sadhus, who had huts who stayed on their land. Then the next was that it was given to the animals. And then next it was given to the children. The next was given to the adults, the male adults. The last was the women who would have their share. And so it went down. And whatever still remained was distributed to the people who worked on the farm so that they also benefited. So it was that awareness of something that we haven't made. And that's a fact. We didn't make nature. We didn't make an apple. We didn't make anything. But it's come to us as a gift. And so it's precious and has to be recognized, the whole system of bhog, offering food to the deities. So every part of life is connected very much with nature and the awareness of the sanctity of nature.
Beautiful, thank you. In the studio in Dubai, Golo asked the same person, Mrs. Davan, a question about India being a country with incredible spiritual legacy rooted in values and ethics. You asked her how a revival of ethics and moral principles can change the current trend. And I remember she didn't actually answer that question. And Golo, how did that question arise and what would be your own answer to that?
Well, we can see that India is undergoing a dramatic change on the international stage also. When I came first to India in the mid-80s, India was the very sick man in a sick person in Asia, and it had a huge deficit, and everybody thought in India there are snake charmers and hungry children. You know, that was a bit the picture we had of India. And India has gone a long way since then and now become an economic powerhouse. But at the same time, we can see also in a certain way a revival of traditional old, belief systems in India, which are being revived. It's a Hindu national idea, a concept which is being publicized into the general population of India, and India is shifting slowly, and people remember the old stories, they remember the old ideas and concepts which have been prevalent in India in old days, especially old scriptures, old ideas that we are all. And if you look at the motto of the G20, which happened last year in India, which I found very interesting. G20 was the meeting of all head of governments of the 20 most economic, most strong countries in the world. So this India was the hosting that G20. And it was one family, one world, What was it?
One family, one world, one future.
Yeah, this was one family, one world, and one future. And that's quite amazing that from India, such a message comes to the whole world. And if we all remember a couple of years ago, the government through Modi initiated the International Yoga Day. And so it is almost as if India become a moral authority again, and India is growing in stature. And you can see this economically, that India becomes a powerhouse. India is the only country right now where the large international companies are investing in a big way, because India has the potential to grow for the next 20 years. There's no other region in the world where it is the same. So a lot of money, a lot of resources are coming to India, but also a lot of political attention, because India is right smack in the middle. It is in the middle to China, in the middle to Asia, in the middle to Australia. India is very centrally strategical, very, very centrally located, and India suddenly becomes important. And India is growing in stature. And I was thinking, why is that going to happen? And then I remembered, oh, the Brahma Kumaris is here meditating since 80 years, and that's a subtle effect of that purification process which we initiated and which is slowly transcends into the whole perception of India, how India is be seen by the outside world. And I think at the end of this process, India will be the country which will be revealed as the place of the next Satyuga, as the most ancient referred civilization on this planet. And India, Brahma Kumaris will be revealed, but I feel also India as a nation, as the oldest, the most powerful, the most glorious nation will be revealed. And so I was asking a bit that question in that context. And for scientists, of course, for Indian scientists, it's not easy to sort of make that connection to the old, great India, which was once there, because they're still very much oriented in their science world and towards the West. But I feel East and West comes together, and India will play the key role and will be revealed in the near future.
Thank you for both of you addressing the legacy of India. Very beautiful. Thank you. We started the interview by going down the memory lane, and my last question will be about looking ahead. What is our most important step the Brahma Kumaris Environment Initiative need to take? What does the family need to take? But before that question, I'll ask you, what have your main learning be as personal learning from our 15 years doing focused environment service?
I've been very aware that it's our stability and our consistent message that's created a very strong bond of friendship with many, many people at COP, because many have come and gone, some have come and stayed, and those who've stayed have been watching us. And in Dubai in particular, there were several people who had invited us. Well, we had 60 panels. 15 of those were what we did, but so many others were invitations from other people to be on their panel. And in a few of them, people would say that we've been observing what the Brahma Kumaris say, and your message has been very consistent through the years. And there's a stable force. Somebody said that when we see that the Brahma Kumaris are here again, we feel a sense of safety and protection. So things like this. So, you know, when Baba says that the most important thing is your stage, it's a reality. Whatever else you say, they've forgotten. Whatever else pictures you've shown, they've forgotten. Statistics don't stay in people's heads. But your stability, your calm, and the consistency of a message, you know, advertisers know that. Repeat the same message again and again and again. Baba does this. But we don't use the same words, but certainly it's been a very consistent message through all these years.
And your personal learning?
The value of friendship.
The value of friendship.
Yeah, because that's what has created that bond of friendship.
acolo.
For me, the climate conference, visiting, being part of the climate conference in the last 15 years has been an incredible learning curve. I understand that things take time. I learned patience. I learned to be steady. I learned to express myself better and keep points in my brain and sort of make myself better understood and make also the spiritual context in the environmental field make better being understood by people. Over the years, I have noticed that it is very, very important for us to have a smile on the face and touch the heart of the people. At the climate conference, just imagine there are 150 to 200 programs every day. It's the total information overload. If you can think on any information overload, you have to go to the climate conference. Everywhere are screens, everywhere are messages, everywhere are programs, and everywhere people are talking. Everybody talks about money, strategy, transformation, technology, and how to fix. And the latest crazy news is artificial intelligence. You might not know, but we heard that artificial intelligence will fix all the problems of the future, including climate change, loss of biodiversity, and conflicts in the world, and will create golden age. That's what some people say. That's not what we say. I heard other people say, they say artificial intelligence is using way too much of energy and is being utilized to produce more fake news. So that is the other story. So what I felt is, in order to deal with this information overload, we have to be present in the conference with an open, loving heart and touch the heart of the people. And once we touch the heart of the people, there is almost like a space of silence and experience being created. And they feel, oh, here's something real. Something real is going on. Something deep is going on. And then there is this moment where you meet somebody and where you can give person a glimpse of an idea, of an experience. And that's actually what they remember at the end of the climate conference. They remember these moments of meeting a BK. So it's almost like a self-learning process to become more like a lighthouse and a mighthouse and have a smiling face in the middle of the information overload and the climate circus, as I call it.
Thank you. And looking ahead then, and maybe leaving the conference setting a bit, what is it that our environment initiative need to focus on looking ahead? What does the family need to focus on in terms of environment?
I know it's not easy, but if we can reduce plastic usage, especially single-use plastic, in England, there's now a law that's come in that shops don't have single-use plastic, but somehow within the Brahmin family, to change from plastic to maybe greaseproof paper for tollies and things like this, my hope is that, my request is that people actually recognize the need to move away from plastic and use other materials instead, especially single-use plastic.
Thank you.
One other thing, if you can have even a little pot in your balcony or in your house in which you grow a little bit of food, that's important also. I know that somewhere in many places conditions are not so suitable, and you get maybe one harvest a year. Here in India, you can get three harvests a year. So, and within a little pot, you can get enough to feed a family of three or four, a little nuclear family. And if you've got a garden, definitely you should plant some vegetables and herbs.
Yeah, the current time and the crisis we are seeing definitely is a call for all of us to change. We not only have climate crisis, we have also loss of biodiversity Animals are disappearing, trees are disappearing. We have economic crisis and raising number of conflicts in the world. And this is all interconnected. Even earthquakes are interconnected to climate change because the weight distribution on our planet is changing. So it's becoming a big crisis, and some scientists call it a polycrisis. And how Brahmins should react? Well, we always should do the good deed, so we can put a little solar system, we can plant some trees, we have a tree plantation campaign, we can offset our traveling, we have a carbon emission program where you can spend a little bit money for a green project and offset your CO2 emissions. So there are many good things what you can do, and I request you to visit once our webpage, www.echo.brahmakumaris.org. You will find a lot of ideas, concept resources, workshops, interviews, but very practical steps also for the centers, how to go green, segregate waste. For example, in Yagya, we are setting up now a waste segregation and biogas plant, you know, which will be a very, very good example for whole India and the whole region. But on the other side, the situation is a very powerful call for all of us to intensify our spiritual dana, our spiritual efforts, and really now bring into practice what Baba is expecting from us, to become soul conscious, to purify our thought process, to become angel and heal ourselves and heal the world. This is the call of the time, that we become so powerful and so shiny that no darkness can touch us, no hopelessness can touch us, and we really reveal ourselves and we reveal Baba. And by this powerful atmosphere, we bring healing energy to the world and to the planet. We literally infuse energy in all the atoms, in all the molecules, and we drive impurity out of the world. We purify the whole world, not only the world, we purify the universe. And by this mental process, this strengthening of the self, this shiny, this becoming light, becoming angel, we create the new golden age. And if we focus on this new world which is right in front of us, then nothing what is happening here is bothering us. We become shiny and we become an inspiration for the other people. That's the sort of the time calling us now to do. That's my feeling.
आज है सब मोहताज योग लगा कर पाप मिटा ले स्वर्ग सजा ले तू आज काम क्रोध मद लोभ मोह वश आज है सब मोहताज योग लगा कर पाप मिटा ले स्वर्ग सजा ले तू आज संगम युग में परम पिता शिव कहते हैं राज
तू है एक अविनाशी आत्मा सुन लो मेरी आवाज आत्मा सुन लो मेरी आवाज
सुख शांति और पावनता से झोले भर लो आज
योगी बनो ज्ञानी बनो योगी जीवन है प्यारा
मुक्ति और जीवन मोक्ष चलना है, चलना है घर वापस, अब तो यही ज्ञान का सार।
योगी बनो ज्ञानी बनो, योगी जीवन है प्यारा, योगी जीवन है प्यारा, योगी जीवन है प्यारा।
So thank you very much, and that was a good kickoff into traffic control. And Golo mentioned the website, and I brought some leaflets here, and there are here in the front. If any one of you like a leaflet to read about environment initiative, you can take. And if you want to have the green newsletter for the Brahmins, you can give me your email when you see me. And then tonight there is a peace concert in Daddy Yankee Park at 6:30 to 7:30. It's the evening meditation. And Golo, you spoke about our stage before traffic control. Maybe Sistienti, like a final comment, any inspiration before we go? So any last?
Golo gave a beautiful summary of the spiritual preparation that's so important. Absolutely agree with that. And I just like to add the word resilience. You know, little things go wrong and we get upset with that, but the more soul conscious I am, the more I draw power from Baba, like Baba explained today, the more I have the capacity to be able to go beyond that and have the resilience not to be pulled down by all the horrible things that you've been hearing about. All those things are real, they're going to happen, but I know I have to stay up above. Whatever is happening is here, and we know it's going to happen, no surprise, no shock, but let my stage be powerful enough to be up above. Then I can keep myself spiritually safe, not physically, but spiritually, and also help others around me in the role of angel.
So thank you to both of you very much, and let's give them a hand, shall we?
Yes.
And to you.
So that was really beautiful to sit here and asking questions and feel your engagement. So thank you very much.